Karatan during the Great Crusade. Unwashed, malnourished, the soldiery of Kartor City were a sorry sight. Like an ant horde, dressed in carapaces of dirty red, they filed from the open city gates with their arms held above their heads in surrender. The wall guard had come first, escorting their captains and officers. Then the first-line troopers from the courtyard and the second barricaders, the tower sentries, the inner barracks troopers, the reserves, the militia. They piled their weapons in the city square, as instructed by the loudhailers of Commander Arvek's black-jacketed discipline masters. By the time the city had been emptied of its warriors, the surrendered material reached into a mighty black pyre. Civilians came next. Women pressed infants to their chests. Wide-eyed men tramped in solemn procession, too afraid to cry or wail, too broken to do anything beyond stare into the rising dawn that crept across the sand dunes like a patient predator. Canines, cattle led by farmers, labourers, fabricators of every stripe, vendors, clerks, scribes, and children. They vacated Kartor, their home and solace, in a great and sullen exodus. Vodician tanks flanked battalions of Utric fusiliers and Nevite hunters, crisp in their army uniforms. Even Commander Arvek himself leaned from the cupola of his storm sword to watch the throng of natives tramp past. Several stopped at the feet of their oppressors, pleading for mercy until the discipline masters moved them along. Others balked at the shadow of Princeps Lockyer's fire kings, believing them gods rendered in iron. When aggression and intimidation could not move them, these poor individuals had to be carried by teams of orderlies from the Medicaid. There was little else to use these surgeons and hospitallers for. The Imperial force had ended the conflict unscathed. And this was despite the presence of Xenos among the dirty hordes. It was a fact that both pleased and irritated the Lord of the Drakes greatly. "He was right," Vulcan muttered, watching Kartor City from a distance as it gradually emptied.
"My lord?"
asked Numion, standing beside his Primarch in the muster fields. Nearby, on a plain of earth flattened by Imperial pioneers, the salamanders were re-embarking their stormbirds for immediate redeployment. Compliance was over. The Imperium had won.
"Bloodless," he said,
Vulcan replied, surveying the human masses as they left the city. On the walls of this last bastion, cannon embrasures lay empty, watchtowers stood like impotent sentinels, and only shadows manned the battlements. One by one, soldier and civilian alike, the entire populace of Kartor submitted to the will of the Imperium.
Was it not?
For the first time in almost an hour, Vulcan turned his fiery gaze on his equerry. Numion did not so much as flinch. Even his heartbeat did not betray him.
"You are a brutal warrior, Artellus," said the Primarch.
"I am as you need me to be, my lord."
He bowed his head just a little, showing deference.
"Indeed. All of the vaunted Pyre Guard are without equal in the 18th. Like the deep drakes, you are savage and fierce, sharp of claw and tooth."
Vulcan nodded to the blade affixed to his equerry's back. It had yet to be bloodied on this campaign, and judging by the utter capitulation of the Kartans, it would remain unsullied.
"But would you slaughter an entire city, soldier and civilian alike, just to send a message and spare further bloodshed?"
There was no right answer, and Numion knew it.
"The scales are in Kurz's favour. Blood for blood. Yet I'm left with a cloud of compromise and guilt over my conscience."
Numion looked down as if the earth at his feet could provide an answer.
"I feel it too, my lord. But what is there to be done?"
He spared a glance at the rest of the pyre guard, who were waiting solemnly for their captain and primarch a little way back, separate from the legion. Vulcan looked over to where one army was met by another, as several of Commander Arvek's battalions joined up with swathes of Munitorum staff to receive the natives and accept their surrender. The army troopers did it with their lasguns held ready. The Munitorum officers greeted them with neuroquills and data slates instead.
I don't know yet, but had I realized how deep Kurz's malady went, I would not have agreed to this compliance.
Numion regarded Vulcan.
His malady? You think the Primarch ill?
In a manner of speaking, yes. A sickness, and a most insidious one. The darkness of his home on Nostramo. I think he never really left it.
You could take these grievances to Lord Horus or Lord Dorne.
Vulcan nodded.
I have always valued the counsel of my elder brothers. One is close to the Crusade, the other to Terra. Between them, they will know what to do.
You still sound troubled, my lord.
I am, Artellus. Very much so. None of us wants another sanction, another empty pillar in the great investiture, another brother's name excised from all record. It is shame enough to bear the grief for two. I've no wish to add to it. But what choice do I have?
Numion's reply was muted, for he knew how it grieved Vulcan to speak ill of his brothers, even one such as Kurz.
None at all.
Nestling in a shallow desert basin by the muster field, the Munitorum had assembled an armada of transportation vessels. Gunmetal grey, stamped with the Departamento sigil, and attended by a flock of overseers, guards, codifiers, and quartermasters, the ships were being prepped for immediate atmospheric embarkation. Unlike the Stormbirds, these vessels were not bound for fields of war. Not all of them. Not yet. They were vast cyclopean things, far larger than the legionary dropships or the tank transporters utilized by the army. Designated for recolonization, army recruitment, and in some instances potential legion candidacy, the fate of every Kartan man, woman, and child would depend on how wholly they embraced their new masters. Certainly none would return to Karatan again. Only the manner of their departure and their onward destination were in question.